that? That's the slamming of the writing jail door, locking away our story. What will cast our story into this dungeon? When we commit one of the writing craft sins and disrupt a reader's engagement with the story. These sins cause a horrid reading experience. We want our readers lost in our stories, carried through intriguing events by characters we're rooting for. Only readers have the ability to cast our stories into the jail, not other writers, not gatekeepers, not critics, and not ourselves. What are the five chief writing crimes? In this episode, we find out. Welcome to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers, from newbies to veterans and everyone in between. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. We're hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Runes, all from Writers, Inc. Books. Each episode lasts as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, drive a short commute, or take a brisk walk. Listen for links to show notes and resources at the end of our broadcast. Now, on to the episode. Before we discuss five chief writing crimes, let's check in with the progress in the November Writing Challenge. Our last check-in will be next week, December 1st, when we will have passed the challenge's deadline. On November 24, 24 days in, if you're writing the minimum, 1,667 words per day, you should be 8 words past the 40,000 word mark. Writing this minimum, though, doesn't take into consideration Thanksgiving and Black Friday and time with family and friends. I've been trying to write 1,800 words per day, which means today's goal for me is 43,200 words, but I'll lose Thanksgiving and Black Friday. I also have no work today. So at the end of yesterday, I had 41,863 words. When I work on Saturday, the 26th, I need to complete 43,663 words. That leaves 4 days, 7,200 words, just over 50,000 words, which is the goal. Are you on schedule for the challenge goal? Excellent. You've shown two skills of the pro writer, daily devotion and persistence. Lagging behind? That does happen. Keep riding along even if you are a turtle writer and will finish days and days after the November challenge is over. As long as you keep writing, that's what matters. A little every day can achieve a lot over time. Before we leave this opening, we have an opportunity for you, a bit of gratitude for listeners, and also a Christmas gift. For the first 5 listeners who reply before December 5th, we offer a free planner for writers. The Think Pro Planner focuses on daily word counts and projects. Write to winkbooks at AOL.com and ask for the free planner. Give your name and a mailing address. We won't collect your personal information. This planner is our gift to you, not an imposition. Deadline for entry is December 5th. Now on to the episode. 5 writing crimes to avoid. Remember, these crimes disrupt the reader's enjoyment of story. We writers have an unwritten contract with readers. They offer their interest and engagement and money, while we are to offer a great story, likable characters, and writing skills that won't interfere with their enjoyment. We capture them with their curiosity about an idea we present. That's the dual roles of the cover and the book description. Then we offer pages and pages for them to read. We're actually demanding a lot. Their money, their interest, their attention, and their time. They could focus on something else. That we have them at all is an amazing thing. Which makes these crimes all the more serious. We ask readers to suspend their disbelief and enter our world. They come to us expecting a professional product. When we don't deliver, they feel betrayed. I used to toss the book to the floor for the worst offenders. Today, I should delete without finishing. So many books, so little time, and my entertainment time is precious to me. What are the 5 writing crimes? They are all classics that we've heard before. How will this presentation for those crimes be different? I hope to offer ways to avoid the crimes. These are not ranked except to the easiness of understanding the solutions. All solutions require work and learning, so that doesn't make them easy. Understanding what to do, that is where the easiness is. Easiest crime to fix is our first one, which is related to foreshadowing. We don't want signaling. But readers expect foreshadowing. Signaling is giving the readers clues about what will happen when readers don't want to be told. They might anticipate, they might suspect, they might guess, but that shouldn't come from you. Signaling is a foreshadowing that isn't a detail. In my recent murder mystery, the weapon of choice was a golf club. I needed to obscure the golf club after its first mention, but I didn't, and my first reader wasn't happy. I had over-signaled. I kept calling the weapon that did the murder a club. I needed to change how that murder weapon was referenced. I scrambled to make changes. Since the murderer used the golf club as a walking stick for the first mentioned, I did use the club, and then I said walking stick next, and didn't mention it again until the very end. When the doctor described the possible murder weapon, instead of club, I had him say stout stick and bludgeon. Hopefully, that killed the signaling. Foreshadowing is what I hoped that I had achieved, giving a hint of the clue early in the story, then obscuring the detail by placing it away from the discussion of the murder weapon and obscuring it further with the doctor's potential list of weapons. This is a classic technique by mystery writers, hiding the clue early and burying it in other details. Other writers have to receive equally weighty and vivid details to ensure the clue is hidden. You know what your clue is, you just need to hide it. Signaling can be hard to spot for a writer. Sometimes we don't even know we're doing it. Get it spotted, though, and we can fix it. Our second crime is window dressing, which is also detailed focused. When we rough out the story, we often don't know what details will be important. We have a setting or a character that we want everyone to see. For important characters and locations, we do want our readers to envision them. The not important details, we can't belabor them. The reader works through 3 pages on a tattooed barista and thinks she'll be important, only for the coffee shop to never appear again. You've broken one of those unwritten sections of the contract with the reader. If the barista is a worry line or a wish for the main character, that's different. She has a role more than placeholder. But don't spend 3 pages when the barista only needed 3 sentences. Locations are the same way. We think descriptions of settings create vividness, but not every location is important. We do need to place the reader, but do so with the main character's stomping grounds, special places, and locations that are important to the story. After the manuscript is finished, read through for unnecessary characters and locations that received more weight than necessary. Cut them down. Cutting is hard. We slaved for that description, that dialogue, a quick repartee. Or if you want to keep the barista or the scruffy courier who makes the main character long for freedom, have them recur in the story. However, don't just add extra scenes so you can use them. Every scene needs a purpose. Every character needs a purpose. They need to advance plot, reveal something about the conflict, or provide a revelation about character. The best scenes do all three. Having the barista and the main character flirt, and then the main character longs for her, only for her to die in the shootout at the very end, that waits the main character with unexpected angst. Now we're really investing the readers in our stories. Third writing crime? Boring details. I'm certain that you've heard of vivid verbs, pounced for jumped, sped or scurried rather than run. Lack of vivid details doesn't engage the reader or the story. Vividness gives energy to the page and also helps the reader experience the story. Sometimes vivid details lurk on every page. Lurk is vivid. It replaces hide and occur. Vivid details occur on every page. That's the difference between occur and lurk. Lurk is much stronger. We have to dig out the words that need punching up and find the right replacement. Beware, we're not on a synonym hunt. We're not looking for synonyms, just the vivid word. Change can use mutation in a monster story, transformation in a fantasy. The French expression is bon mot, the right word. Nouns, verbs, adjectives. Walk or slog. Sit or fidget, slump or hunch, red barn or weathered planks hanging off the leaning barn. Now we have an image, the road extending ahead, our ribbon of road revealed in the bright headlamp of a motorcycle. By the way, read The Highwayman by Alfred Noyes, The road was a ribbon of moonlight across the purple moor. That's vivid all through. Look at every sentence. Don't change everything. Just the ones that help the reader live on the pages with the characters. Take time while you're learning to do it. Replacing boring details with vivid words is a key process in the revision stages of writing. On to our fourth crime, continuity. When characters' names are changed mid-book, as descriptive details change, a green-eyed blonde becomes a sapphire-eyed redhead. In the massive manuscript that is a novel, names of places can become lost. For series, this happens even more easily. We almost have to map out our towns and cities, draw genealogy charts, backgrounds, and baggage for every character who recurs in the book and in the series. Keeping track of all that can be a massive endeavor. Do yourself a favor. Keep a master book. Your readers will appreciate it. A master book, sometimes called a book Bible, gathers all factual details in one place. I've talked about master books before in this podcast. It keeps happening. Every 10th book I read or so, someone's details will change. When revising, keep your master book handy and check descriptions and names. Follow the maps to ensure the roads that the main character is racing along so he doesn't end up in the river. Avoid those splashes. It can be a real pain to keep the master book organized. Update it after every writing session. You'll need to add in details you don't think are important, descriptions that you just tossed out. In a series, those details can suddenly come alive on you. Accuracy is important. The sharp reader will gleefully inform you of errors, along with everyone else. Careless mistakes can make potential readers hesitate to purchase. Here's crime number 5, head hopping. This occurs when we have the viewpoints of two or more characters in one scene. A scene is always presented from only one character's viewpoint. Our point of views can be limited to one character throughout the book, or it can be omniscient, which simply means more than one character's viewpoint. We can have no thoughts and feelings, which is objective, or we can have thoughts and feelings, omniscient, again, many characters, sometimes called deep. If you want to have two more viewpoints, go for it, but no multiple viewpoints in a single scene. The great Daphne du Maurier wrote The Birds in the point of view of Nat Tyler, except one sentence early in the story. It's a jarring interruption. It supplies info about Nat Tyler and the person who thinks that, but it doesn't really work and it's not really necessary. These are thoughts and feelings, mind you, not speaking. A scene focuses through one character's eyes. The next scene can continue with that character or shift to someone else. But we're talking about no head hopping in one scene. Du Maurier head hopped once in that long story, and it's what I remember first when I think of that story. Since it causes reader confusion, head hopping is considered anathema. Any confusion or struggle on the reader's part draws them out of the story. Once out of the story, the reader can easily walk away and never return. Writers should want to keep the reader immersed in the story. Immersion means a richer entertainment experience and will cause readers to seek the next such entertainment experience. Some writers are known for head hopping in scenes. When you have their fame and money, you can choose to head hop. For now, stick to one point of view in one scene. Point of view shift can sometimes be hard to spot. You might have to turn to a friend to spot the first instance in your manuscript. We do want to present both viewpoints, especially when scenes are crucial, focusing on intimacy or surprising details. Don't fall into the trap of head hopping, however. And don't write the same scene from two points of view, first one, then the other. Readers don't like repeated information. They think you're belaboring a point unnecessarily. Pick the character with the most to lose, the one with the most emotional angst, and write the scene from their viewpoint. All 5 of these crimes distance the reader from the story rather than keeping the readers fascinated or enthralled or enchanted. Readers become perturbed when they get cast out of a story. Signaling takes out the mystery, the tension, and suspense. Window dressing makes them think they're wasting time plowing through unnecessary words. Lack of vivid details saps energy from the written page, while continuity gives an impression of the writer's sloppiness. Head-hopping destroys the narrative point of view. Avoid these five crimes, and readers will be much happier. Your stories won't head to jail and not pass go. Soon, avoiding these crimes will become automatic, and you can look for more writing crimes. I haven't mentioned SLUs, the famous telling, not showing, wrong homonyms. How many ways can you spell aisle? I know three, and there's many more writing crimes. But these five are the worst, because they toss our readers out of the story, and our readers toss our stories into jail. Next week, we'll talk about plans for 2022. Inspiration for this week comes from Rita Dove, who says, "What happens when a writer doesn't want to write anymore? When the progression of fingers across the keyboard is like a lazy old dry horse hitched to the millstone, blinders and yoke lashed, the only path between day and nightfall, one's own scoured rut of circling footsteps?" Talk about vivid details. That quotation is full of them. And what does happen when a writer doesn't want to write anymore? They fall into the writing crimes. Thanks for listening to The Write Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Rooms, all from Writers, Inc. Books. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Show notes and resource links for these and other episodes are at thewritefocus.blogspot.com. Our music is licensed through Audio Jungle. It's called Background Music Logo, created by Alexander Polishchuk, known on Audio Jungle as Plastic 3. The music comes in five different iterations. Write to us at winkbooks@aol.com if you have speculations, comments, or questions. When you find value in our content, share with your writing friends or write a review. We're small beans here. We don't have the advertising budget of the big peeps, and you can make a difference. And whatever occurs, write on.